Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate that very much. Good morning, everyone. I was with you Wednesday after being gone for a couple of weeks, and just was thrilled to get back in town. You want to take some time and hear a story? I've got one for you about trying to get back from out west. It seems like all the forces were conspiring against us, weather, I-40 bridge, you name it. I was thrilled to be back here on Wednesday, and I'm even more delighted to be standing before you and participating in this Bible study with you this morning. So, David, thank you very much for covering for me for the last 2 weeks and making some headway through this. I tell you, this study, it has now turned into a study of 1 Samuel by committee, which is good. You know, it's great to have different people with their perspectives sharing their thoughts about this study. But we've looked at Saul, we've looked at David, and I guess the more I think about it, this is really a poor illustration, I'm going to use it anyway. Every time I turn to a new chapter, as I've sort of gone back through this, preparing for the class and now getting ready for it each week, this is a lot like one of those can't-miss shows, right? If you can find one that's worthy of watching. And it's like binge-watching. You know, you can't wait to see what's going to happen next. This roller coaster ride of David being anointed the next king of Israel. We see Saul and we see his struggles to just maintain his sanity, which is in and out, and sometimes you can reason with him, sometimes you can't. But like I said, this makes for a terrific read, and it's been really really good to walk through this. I hate I missed, we focused on Jonathan, and we talked about how good it would be if we all had a Jonathan in our lives, and I hate I missed the discussion of Abigail, because I feel the same way about her. We all need an Abigail in our lives. Men, we need an Abigail as wives. We need someone who has wisdom, who sometimes just gently lets us know you may not be headed in the right direction. We need that calming, wise, humble person in our lives, and Abigail certainly fits that. And again, we think about God's providence. God has, he's seen David through all of this. He's made it so that David is going to be this next king. He's a man after God's own heart, as we've referred to him over and over again. And even though David's having to face some really difficult circumstances, right? I mean, one minute you're told you're going to be the next king of Israel, and the next you're there in the king's palace. You've found favor in the king's sight. You're thinking, oh, okay, this is how this is going to work. I'm going to have an opportunity to see the king and see how he works and learn from him, and then Saul goes off the deep end, and he's on the run for his life, and it's this and that, and through it all, up to this point, we see David, even though there's some instances where he uses deception for his benefit, we see why David is called a man after God's own heart. We see his humility, we see his trust in God, he has faith in God. I'm telling you, I'm struggling a little bit as we get into chapter 27. I've done this a couple of times now. We've had some people over just informally to get a bite to eat, maybe play a little bit. And I use those opportunities to use those people for my sounding board. So some of you are in the audience tonight and appreciate that. I call it my pre-Bible class. We talked about this a little bit last night. David is in a very precarious position, I think, as we get into chapter 27. If you remember at the end of chapter 26, David has really given Saul a reason to pause and to think about what he's doing. And we see, and in fact, we'll read a couple of those verses in chapter 26. Right there at the end of it, we see David, you know, he has, in verse 22, he says, "Behold, the spear of the king." He has that in his possession, as you read. "Now let one of the young men come over and take it." And so at the end of this chapter, in verse 25, Saul says to David, "Blessed are you, my son David. You will both accomplish much and surely prevail." So David went on his way, and Saul returned to his palace. But earlier in there, verse 21, Saul admits he'd sinned. And his plea with David is, "Return, my son, for I will not harm you again, because my life was precious in your sight this day. Behold, I have played the fool and have committed a serious error." So if we don't know 27, we're thinking, okay, here we go. Finally, Saul has come to his senses. He realizes the error of his way, realizes he's in sin, realizes he has no reason whatsoever to be pursuing David, much less seeking to take his life. And we're thinking, oh, this is terrific. But for those of you that have read ahead, what's the problem here? What doesn't happen that we might expect to happen in chapter 27 we're about to read? Anybody? This sets the stage for what for David? I mean, Saul's offered him an invitation to return, so what would we expect to happen here?
Yeah,
here's his opportunity to go home. Yeah, so that seems like the natural step that's going to take here. But what likely is going through David's mind right now? Yeah, right, Larry. I mean, we've been here. We've done this. We got the T-shirt. We got the hat. We've seen how this plays out. Yeah, we talk some sense into him, but it doesn't last very long. And the next thing you know, he's got that trusty spear at his hand, which I'm not sure why David would return the spear to him. I guess there's reasons for that. He is God's anointed, and it is his spear. I'm not so sure I would have given the spear back, given the circumstances surrounding the spear, but nevertheless, that's what happens. But that's not what happens in 27. So there's something that we're going to need to deal with, and I really would like some discussion this morning, is because I'm sort of struggling a little bit with David's emotional state, with David's spiritual state, what really happens. Because chapter 27 really leaves us sort of, what's going on here? But let's read chapter 27 together. I'll share a few thoughts. We'll see if we can't move into chapter 28 this morning. I'm trying to be ambitious here. All right. Chapter 27 of 1 Samuel begins, "Then David said to himself, 'Now I will perish one day by the hand of Saul. There's nothing better for me than to escape into the land of the Philistines. Saul then will despair of searching for me anymore in all the territory of Israel, and I will escape from his hand.' So David arose and crossed over, he and the 600 men who were with him, to Achish the son of Maach, king of Gath. And David lived with Achish at Gath, he and his men, each with his household, even David with his two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and Abigail the Carmelitess, Nabal's widow. Now it was told Saul that David had fled to Gath, so he no longer searched for him. Then David said to Achish, 'If now I have found favor in your sight, let them give me a place in one of the cities in the country that I may live there, for why should your servant live in the royal city with you?' So Achish gave him Ziklag that day. Therefore Ziklag has belonged to the kings of Judah to this day. The number of days that David lived in the country of the Philistines was 1 year and 4 months. Now David and his men went up and raided the Gershurites and the Gerizzites and the Amalekites, and they were the inhabitants of the land from ancient times, as you come to Shur, even as far as the land of Egypt. David attacked the land and did not leave a man or a woman alive, and he took away the sheep, the cattle, the donkeys, the camels, and the clothing. Then he returned and came to Achish. Now Achish said, 'Where have you made a raid today?' And David said, 'Against the Negev of Judah, and against the Negev of the Jeremelites, and against the Negev of the Kenites.' David did not leave a man or a woman alive to bring to Gath, saying, 'Otherwise they will tell about us,' saying, 'So has David done, and so has been his practice all the time he has lived in the country of the Philistines.' So Achish believed David, saying, 'He has surely made himself odious among his people Israel, therefore he will become my servant forever.'" All right. We said chapter 26 ends with verse 25, Saul saying to him, "Blessed are you, my son David, you will both accomplish much and surely prevail." And the next statement says, "So David went on his way and Saul returned to his palace." So rather than this reunion that we're expecting, they go their separate ways. And then how does chapter 27, what does it tell us about David starting this off here? What do you take from that very first verse? Yeah, that's a great thought. Ashley, if you didn't hear that, I mean, look how it starts off. David said to himself. So he's thinking this through. He's reasoning this. He's coming to this conclusion, not by reaching out to God and inquiring of God, which we've seen him do over and over again, but reasoning with himself that this is what he needs to do. And so his great plan that he comes up with on himself is to what? He's going to leave the people of God. Now, granted, you might argue and say, well, wait a minute, he's got some reasons for that. He's not insured of his safety. He may be concerned. But up until this point, we've seen him trust God over and over again, but yet all of a sudden he's got this idea that he's thinking to himself. And I'm with Ashley. This really looks like a turning point in the life of David. And I just wonder, there's some other things that are going to happen as we get to the end, as we read through the end of this chapter, about the taking the lives, but let's stick with this thought for a second. So he's thought to himself, He hasn't inquired of God, and he makes this decision. And really, it's the opposite of what's just been told him, right? Saul said, you have nothing to worry about. And again, we can argue about Saul's state of mind. But he says to him in verse 21, as I read, that Saul said to him, I've sinned, return to my son David, for I will not harm you again because my life was precious in your sight. Had David gone down that road before? Had he taken Saul up on his offer? He had, hadn't he? He trusted in God and said, okay, well, maybe this is how this is supposed to work out. There definitely seems something about this as a departure. So just in general, what may be going on here? What could be leading David to this point? Why is he here? Any thoughts?
Jimmy, from verse 4.
Yes. Okay.
And so David probably had reason to understand that. It says Saul sought him no more, which kind of implies Saul had been seen.
That's fair enough. Okay. Yeah. Yes, sir.
I mean, having the king of that nation out to get you would not make you feel very safe in that nation. Right? If the king is trying to kill you, the king could send anybody to try to kill you. He may not know. So him maybe fleeing to the Philistines or still a hostile nation is still a better option than having a place where the king is specifically out to get him.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good thought, right? I mean, and again, when David does that, what is he using? He's using human reasoning, right? That's ultimately what we see here. He's sort of weighing things out and going, no, wait a minute. Here's the offer from Saul. I hear what he's saying. He said it before, and he's gone back on it, and he's sought my life. To John's point, maybe he's given indication that, yeah, okay, yeah, you've said that. You're saying one thing, but you're acting a different way. But certainly he's using this human reasoning, and he comes to the conclusion that the best possible thing he could do is to go where? Does anything seem odd about that? There's a lot of things that seem odd about that, right? I mean, what's the only problem with that? Okay, well, let me ask you this. This king that he's going to, has he entered into the situation before? What do we know about him? Where did we last have an encounter with David and this king? Earlier in this chapter, right? So he's gone there before, and how did that turn out for him? Anybody remember? What was the stumbling block, or what was the problem that presented itself when David went to him the first time? I hear pages ruffling. That's good. You guys are going to go back and look. Anybody? Okay, David, why did he feel the need to do that? Do you remember what had they said? There you go. His reputation has preceded him. The Philistines surely knew who he was, knew what he had done. You know, you really stop and think about this and go, wait a minute, you're going to go do what? You're going to go right back to this person that you felt really the need to act like a lunatic to escape with your life, but somehow now the logic dictates that going back to this person, back to this king, is the most logical thing to do. Anybody else with thoughts on that? Very puzzling, right? Walker. It's a great thought. Walker says fear. Fear is driving this. I completely agree with that. I do believe there is an element of fear in this. He hasn't had the best tutor for this, right? If he's looking at Saul and looking at his example, Saul's been led by fear. We've seen what it's done to him and seen what it's done for his position as the king over the kingdom and what it's meant for the consequences that it's had for the nation, for sure. So certainly fear. Any other element you might think that's driving this? What else has David got working against him?
Leader, but he's going through a lot of trial. I don't care how strong you are. There's only so much trial a man can take.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great thought. He is what we are. He's human. He has the same frailties. He has the same limitations. There's a weariness about this, right? Does David have a reason to be weary? I would say yes. Given what he's gone through, he absolutely has a reason to be weary. And what does weary do to us? Being weary do to us sometimes? It causes us to be off guard. It causes us to lose focus on who we trust in and who we are and who we aspire to be. He aspires to be the king. And so we certainly see an element of that. But I think Ashley said it well in that very first when he says, he said to himself, and he says, I will perish one day by the hand of Saul. Now, Saul's already said that's not going to happen, but David's got in his mind that's what's going to happen. Has David been refreshed? That's the other thing I thought about through this. David had the benefit of some people in his life. Give me some of those people that were in his life that were a benefit that God put in his life to help him with this. Who are they? Absolutely, Jonathan, we've talked about him. Who else? Abigail, who else? Samuel, absolutely. I would say Samuel is a big encouragement to him. Who else? Who was the remaining priest after Doeg had his massacre? Abiathar and the ephod, he had that. God over and over again has people in his life that are there, I believe, to help him through this weary season, through this him being trained to be ready to be the king of Israel. And they have refreshed him. They have encouraged him. Yet, and I'm with Ryan, it seems like he's reached his breaking point here. He's now reasoning with himself. He has no other choice but to go to the Philistines. And then it does give us some of the thinking behind it, right? At the end of verse 1, it says, Saul then will despair of searching for me anymore in all the territory of Israel, and I will escape from his hand. Was he right in that? That's exactly what happened, right? As soon as Saul learned. And what does that say about Saul? Saul learns that he's gone there. What should that have meant for Saul? Why is that a limitation on Saul? What challenge does that present for Saul now? Yeah, you know, he's sort of like, ooh, wait a minute. I've sort of driven him away. I tried to talk him into coming back and being a part of this. Whatever his motives were, we can argue about that. But he now realizes he's with the Philistines. And again, this is just some really strange stuff going on here, very puzzling stuff to now see a man after God's own heart. He's with the enemies of the nation of Israel. And obviously we read through some of that. Go ahead, Jay. Yeah, and I got it, and I'm with you. And fleeing and going places and hiding is one thing, but now he's gone to be with the enemy, right? And we'll discuss this a little bit more, what this means and where it leads. But let's keep going with our thoughts here. So he comes to the conclusion, no choice but to flee to the land of the Philistines for safety. You know, he's set to be the next king of Israel. He's demonstrated his faith repeatedly, unlike what Jay just said. I mean, there are those closest to David who have given David what advice regarding Saul? What should David do? Absolutely. And has the opportunity presented itself? And we see David refusing to do that. And remember, and I wasn't here for it, but the discussion where he's with the guy, the spear, the jug. What does his warrior that's with him, what advice does he offer? What does he say to David? Okay, you don't want to do it. Just say the word. And remember how he describes it? It'll only take one blow. I'm going to pin him to the earth with his own spear. I will not have to do that again. And David reminds him, who is it for us? Who is it for us to strike down the anointed of God? And so we see him demonstrate that humility and that faithfulness in God. But then we run into this chapter where suddenly he comes to the conclusion the best thing you can do is escape the land of the Philistines. Verse 2 says, he arose, he crossed over, he and his 600 men, to Achish. This is the same Achish that we read about earlier in this book. You know, sometimes God's word doesn't give us all the details we want to know. I'd like to know more about this encounter, right? I want to hear the dialogue. Wait a minute, you're back. You're not acting like a lunatic this time. What are you here for? I mean, You don't just go to your enemy and say, oh, by the way, I've got a reservation for 600 plus. You know, put us up in the best hotel. We don't see all of that. All we are told is, in verse 3, David lived with Achish at Gath, he and his men, each of his households, all of these. And then that's it. That's all we get. So it's agreeable. Who knows what those discussions were, but this is what happens. Saul learns this information. We talked about the information flow. It was a lot better than I would have given it credit before really looking into this very closely. He finds this out, just as David thought, no longer going to search for him. And then David's got this strategy, right? Verse 5, he says to Achish, if I have now. And what is strange about this statement? If now I have found favor in your sight. Does that strike you as odd? What is that? What is he saying there? Yeah, part of it's that, right? Do you trust me? If so, I've got this thought I'd like to run by you. But when you are appealing to someone that way, and what are you also doing? If I found favor in your sight, what are you saying to that person? There you go. It's recognizing your place and it's recognizing their place. And again, I struggle with this, right? This is the enemy of Israel. It's the king of the enemy of Israel. And yet David is paying this homage to him, and we get it from a human standpoint. That's necessary, right? If I'm going to get what I want, I need to play nice. I need to be respectful. I need to be humble, recognize his position, recognize my position. I'm on the run. But coming from a man after God's own heart, seeing these words is just hard to read. It's sad, right? And this is not the end of it. He says, let them give me a place in one of the cities in the country that I may live there, for why should your servant live in the royal city with you? Again, there's this humility. I don't deserve to be here in the royal city. Send me somewhere else. Now, is David really being humble about all this, or what's David's thought here? David's setting the stage for what? He has a plan in mind, right? He's formulated, here's what I'm going to do, and I can't really do what I want to do when I'm right under the nose of the king. But you get me about 25 miles, and at this point he doesn't know where he's going, but where he winds up is about 25 miles to the south and east of Gath in Ziklag, which is far enough away to be out from under the king's nose and to do some things that he wants to do. He sets up his base camp. Achish just does this, right? Verse 6 says he gave him Ziklag that day. It's an interesting note here. It says that therefore Ziklag has belonged to the kings of Judah to this day. And then you think about this. The number of days that David lived in the country of the Philistines was 1 year and 4 months. That's a long time to be there in the land of the enemy. And then, as David said, verse 8, David and his men went up. They raided these different places, these inhabitants of the lands from the ancient times. And we see his method, his strategy in verse 9. He attacked the land. He did not leave a man or a woman alive. He took away the sheep, the cattle, the donkeys, the camels, and the clothing. And then he returned and came to Achish. What is this very similar to? What he's doing. Anybody think back to Saul? What was Saul's problem? Saul had been given instructions similar to this, right? Had he carried them out to the letter? Ashley's shaking his head no. What didn't he do? Yeah, spared the king, right? And that's a problem for him. And it's acknowledged that that's a problem. And God says, hey, I'm going to strip the kingdom from you, that you're no longer going to be the king. What do we know about David, his purpose in this? And think about this for a second. In some ways, if you're thinking about what he's doing, what is it that he's doing that Achish likely looks at? A couple things I can think of. Achish looks at and says, thumbs up, you've got my seal of approval. By doing these raids and stuff, what is David and his men able to do for themselves? Yeah, right? So they're not draining the royal treasury. They're not draining the resources of Achish. They're going out and they're completing these successful raids, and therefore they're able to sustain this large group of people that are inhabiting this land, right? I mean, Achish is like, all right, I like this. What else is it that Achish thinks that they are doing?
Ideas.
Correct. You know, his idea is, wow, the mighty David, the conqueror of Goliath, is now fighting for me, for my nation, and he's attacking those Israelites who we disdain. That's what he thinks, right? And so you think about the cunning of this. You think about the strategy of this. I mean, I think there's a lot to be said about that too. Sometimes when we grow weary of doing good and we put our energies to doing less than good, we can be pretty successful at it, can't we? We can get in our own way and we can think, wow, I'm really having a lot of luck here and I'm being very successful, but we're really not doing what we're supposed to be doing. And that seems to be the case here. Josh. Okay.
When they went and conquered the land of Joshua. So he's expanding his kingdom. When he comes into the kingdom, he's going to expand it even further.
Yeah, it does sort of work out. Now, we would make the argument, we'd have to ask, and that's the question we will ask, is that part of his strategy right now? Is he thinking that far in advance? I don't think he is. But that's up for debate. John. Okay.
Destroy them all. And David's doing just that. So I'm the devil's advocate at this moment.
I got you.
I don't think David's doing wrong here. I think David is doing what he needs to do to protect himself, his men. I think David is also doing what God had told the Israelites to do from the very first step they took in the land. And they had not done it.
And this isn't the only instance where we see David or Jonathan doing that, right? Recognizing that that's their mission. I agree with you, John, wholeheartedly. Other thoughts along those lines? Matt, I'll come back to you, Ashley. Okay. I'll come back to that in just a second. Ashley?
I just want to make a clarification.
Yeah.
On whether David is wrong in going on these raids. He is absolutely wrong in lying to Achish about where he's been. I think we've got to make that distinction on that. I think it's very clear. When he comes back and tells Achish, I've been in the Negev of Judah, I mean, that's a straight lie. So I don't think we can support or say that he's in the right in that, for sure. I feel very confident in that. But I also, David's going to really, the Philistines are going to start distrusting him, and Ziklag's going to be taken over. What I think is key in that is, I just glanced ahead, I didn't remember this, but it says, you mentioned this guy in chapter 30, he does reach back out to Abathar the priest and says, bring me the ephod. David, in the next couple of chapters, is going to continue to be brought lower and hit rock bottom, which is a blessing.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great thought. And John, I think you would agree that's sort of what we've got to deal with here, right? I mean, what's happening is ultimately what God wanted to happen, but the way he's going about doing it, we would have some questions about, right? And Matt, back to your thought. So yes, but while I agree with what you're saying, the other thing to think of is, what is the other benefit of not leaving anyone alive? There's no witnesses to say what. What is it that those witnesses could come back and tell King Achish that David has not been forthcoming with? Yes. Yeah. So rather than attacking the nation of Israel, he's basically attacking these other people and making off with their spoil and leaving no one around to be able to come back and say, hey, this is what he's up to. So yeah, we see David operating sort of like in a shadow situation here. And again, he's got the benefit of being away from the king. He's got some room to work with, and he's definitely taking advantage of that for sure. So, Yeah, let's read on, and we'll get some final thoughts here. And this is interesting. It says in verse 9, then he returned and came to Achish. What might that be telling us about he's returning from these raids and going to Achish? What might he be doing by returning to Achish that you would think would be a natural response to the kindness that Achish has shown him? I would think so. I would think part of that, and it doesn't say that here, but I would think what we're led to believe here is that return is to say, I've been successful, and here are some of those benefits. So basically saying, hey, we're earning our keep. And in acknowledgement of what you've done in providing refuge for us and providing a place for us, this is for you. How do you think that makes Achish feel? And not only does he have the Goliath Slayer on his team now, but he's benefiting personally from this, right? The treasury is benefiting personally. He is personally gaining from this. So David's really working him over. And so David says what he says about where I've been. He doesn't leave anyone alive. They're going to tell about this. So David is done, and so he's been to practice all the time. He's lived in the country of the Philistines. Again, I think his strategy is can't leave any witnesses because it's going to really mess up what I'm doing here and what my plans are if I do. I can't leave anyone alive to tell what I'm doing, what I'm involved with. So verse 12 says, Achish believed David, saying he has surely made himself odious among his people Israel. Therefore, he will become my servant forever. That statement by Achish says what about Achish's thoughts about what David has done? What does he reason within himself? Yeah, that's it, right? There may have been an opportunity for a reunion, for restoring, but no longer. Because now, what is David guilty of doing? At least Achish thinks he's guilty of doing. Yeah, now he's turned on his own people. You're not going to find safe passage back. I mean, now you've become an enemy of the nation of Israel. Again, just very puzzling how all this unfolds. Let me look through my notes here. We mentioned where Ziklag is at. The complete victory that we read about in verse 8 and 9, he returns from the raid, he goes to Achish. He's really making these raids on the enemies of Israel. I had a note here, Exodus chapter 23. Let's look back over there real quick. Exodus chapter 23 and verse 22. So Exodus chapter 23, beginning verse 22. But if you truly obey his voice and do all that I say, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. For my angel will go before you and bring you into the land of the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, who are likely most of these people represent the Canaanites, the Hivites and the Jebusites, and I will completely destroy them. You shall not worship their gods, nor serve them, nor do according to their deeds, but you shall utterly overthrow them and break their sacred pillars in pieces. So we see that this, as we've said already, this is what they were instructed to do in the first place, and he is carrying that out in this way. But really, we're puzzled with his reasoning and how he got to this point. So, somebody got a comment in the back? All right, let's do that. Yeah, it's a great thought, and that's a great way to sort of end it. That's what's happened here. This idea of the beginning of this chapter where he's thinking, reasoning within his heart, reasoning to himself, he's come up with this. There is a departure here. He's not the David that would want to inquire of God for whatever reason at this point, and we've named some of them. Fear. He's grown weary. you know, he's turning to his own devices, and they're working. He's cunning. He's shrewd. He's what we would expect out of the next king of Israel. But we don't see any mention, to your point, don't see any mention whatsoever of where's that trust in God? Where is that recognition of the providence of God and being faithful and recognizing him and inquiring of him to know what the next step is to do? We don't see that here. And I think that's key for sure in this. Let's see here. You know, this other thought, and I'll leave this as our final thought, and maybe a couple more comments before we move into chapter 28 next week, Lord willing. I can't help but thinking with this not leaving a man or woman alive. You know, we think about where the roots for our sin come from, and I cannot help but think what David's going through here and this period of time in his life. I don't think there's any psalms that we can make reference to from this period that I'm aware of, which would make sense, right? This is not a time for him to be thinking about God, it doesn't seem like anyway. And I may be stretching that too much. Maybe there is still a part of him that's very much sort of trying to balance his physical needs and what he should do, but we don't see mention of God here in this chapter for sure. But I can't help but think forward to what's going to happen with Bathsheba and Uriah, and some of the same sort of reasoning with himself and the same cunning. You remember all the elaborate things that he did when it came to that. Rather than just confronting the fact that what he was doing was wrong, he went out of his way to try to make it so that no one would know or it wouldn't be found out what he had done. And I just can't help but think, does some of that get born in this time in his life right here? Or maybe reaching with that some, but I certainly thought about that as I was working my way through this chapter. We talked about him benefiting Achish here. Achish thinks, and I wrote this, Achish thinks he's pulling the strings and is in control of David, but ultimately David's having his cake and eating it too. The other thing I wrote as a comment here, no significant span of time from the start of 26 where it says David said to himself. And what I mean by that is, doesn't seem like there's much time that has passed, nor that there's been any sort of crisis situation that we're aware of that would explain why there's been this sudden change in David's heart, why he's operating a little differently. So maybe a couple other thoughts, but that's what I've got this morning. You've been a great audience this morning. Thank you for your comments and for your participation. Thank you very much.